Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Today I'm going to tackle the topic that a good supporter of mine in Europe has been asking me to do for an extremely long period of time. And in this topic we're going to get into the issue of race, race mixing, the consequences of these things. There is an unfortunate angle to this for the poor Portuguese, and I want to discuss the various aspects of this. When people look at the wars that took place in southern Africa, they always look at the Rhodesians and the South Africans and the Southwest Africans, but nobody ever really talks about the Portuguese. They don't talk about the Portuguese wars and what the Portuguese did. Some people do, like on Alex Linder's VNN forum. There are people who do, and they've got good information that they put out there. But I found that living in southern Africa, that even the whites who live in southern Africa are missing a lot of their own history and truths, even from recent times, including countries right on our doorstep, like the Portuguese in Mozambique and Angola. And I began to get interested in this quite a while back, and a lot of my first research went out in the discussion that I put out called 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa, which I began working on almost a year ago, and which I gave in Canada and America, and to a couple of selected groups here in South Africa. And it was as a result of my interest in the Portuguese that I uncovered more and more things about the Portuguese. So what I want to do is I want to explain to you at the outset a little bit about the good and the bad and how the Portuguese feature in this whole thing. Everything that liberals and Jews are telling those of you who live in Europe and America, everything they're telling you in North America, in Canada, in Europe about race and how to deal with other races, everything is wrong. Everything. You should throw away every single thing you've ever heard from a liberal or a Jew about race. Furthermore, when it comes to experience, our race, all of us who are descended from Europe, who ultimately tie back to our lineage with the Aryans, we have such a broad history and such broad experience spanning hundreds of years of written records. It's actually thousands of years of written records, detailed experiences. We have got such an unbelievably rich wealth of experience that we don't need to ask Jews or anybody else about anything in history, because one group or other of whites has already done it. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that there probably isn't a political, social, or military experiment that hasn't been conducted by our race. We have tried every form of government known to man. We've tried all kinds of economics. We've tried all kinds of military moves. We've done it to death. And you will find in our race that we've got tons and tons of knowledge. A very sad thing is that we give our knowledge away too freely to all the undeserving. And we've got all these Jew rats busy digging around in white European history and then coming up with all kinds of garbage to mislead the other whites. But the truth of the matter is that when it comes to topics like race, history, every conceivable angle of organizing society, every conceivable method of dealing with other races, all of this has been done by our race, not just once, many times. And you'll be astounded at the different experiments and the different struggles of every part of our European race in its heritage in the past. If you want to know about fighting with Muslims and being invaded, you can go and speak to the Bulgarians and the Greeks. If you want to know about exploration, the Spanish and the Portuguese are there. There's not a thing that our people haven't done. And all of our peoples, most of the peoples from Europe, have spread across the world. And before long, they were dominating much of the earth. But a group of people who don't get proper attention are the Portuguese. And the Portuguese are what we're going to focus on in this video, but I'm going to be coming back with other stuff about the Portuguese. So I want to explain to you that those of you who live in North America and Europe, who've been told how to deal with other races, you've only really looked at the South Africans and the Rhodesians as possible models to work from. But you haven't dug enough into the Portuguese. And the Portuguese have got their own sad story to tell. But it's not always sad as well. And the National Socialists among you will want to come and beat down on the Spanish and on the Portuguese, especially in South America. And you're going to want to say to them, you know, yeah, you did wrong here, you did wrong there. But a lot of the things that the whites did wrong, they also did not know it was wrong at the time. And the same is true for ancient Egypt, the whites of ancient Egypt, the same is true for the Romans. White civilizations have been destroyed through race mixing for thousands of years, actually. However, it's only in the last 150 years that actual data has come out and we are able to actually know from a scientific point of view what exactly is going wrong here. And that is what we're going to be looking at with regard to the Portuguese. But there's also the other hidden side of the Portuguese and also the Spanish as well, hey? And that is the time when these people stood up and they fought for what was theirs. And that is the tale that I became focused on when I started digging into the background of the Portuguese. When I was starting to dig into their fights in Africa, I came across the wildest stuff that I've ever come across in race war in Africa. And the Portuguese, it may be said, started out with a cozy attitude towards the blacks. They started out with an attitude of trying to be nice to these people, trying to work with these people, even mixing with them socially and racially. The French, by the way, have also done these things, Spanish. However, as things progressed and as the centuries progressed, there came a time where the Portuguese and the blacks ended up in a race war. And it was the most violent, ruthless racial conflict that ever took place in Southern Africa. It makes the killings of whites in South Africa and whites in Rhodesia look like nothing. The real slaughter, the most brutal slaughter in Africa, took place between the Portuguese and the blacks. Now, nowadays, the Portuguese are very unhappy and very despondent over their fight in Africa because Africa was like their Vietnam. And they're despondent about it because they lost. And they now also have certain baggage that they're trying to hide. They're trying to hide how cruel they were at various points in time because they were actually more brutal than any of the other whites. And the blacks who faced them were the most brutal of any blacks who faced any whites in Southern Africa. So this makes for a fascinating story. And I hope that after this video, you come back and you see when I show you the race war that took place between the Portuguese and the blacks. You will be shocked. In modern times, it's the nastiest thing that's ever happened. And in the end, the Portuguese fought for their land. The Portuguese, in the end, stood for blood and soil. They had their soil and they wanted to keep it at all costs. And they had a plan. And that plan would have worked. They had a grand plan. Their plan was working. They were defeating the blacks. They were smashing them into the ground. In the end, all the Mr. Nice Guy stuff went out the window, and the Portuguese were more brutal than any other whites in Southern Africa. And they were winning. And everything they were doing was the way that Hitler would have approved of, that Franco would have approved of, etc. But in this liberal world, the Portuguese are very quiet about the nasty things they got up to. And furthermore, also, the Portuguese have always been kind to us in Southern Africa. And we've always worked so well with them. And I can identify with them because many bad things happened. When I was a kid, the Portuguese were fleeing into Rhodesia with only their clothes on their backs, only their shirts on their backs. They lost everything. They lost their money. They lost their property. They lost everything. I went to school with Portuguese kids. And we were whites-only schools, and the Portuguese kids were there, and we didn't have problems with them. And in my entire life in South Africa and Rhodesia, we never had problems with the Portuguese. I've never had any issues with them at all. They've fitted in among the other whites. They don't steal from them. They quietly live among them, and they've always been generally good people. So I have a very big soft spot for the Portuguese and for their struggle. But we've got to talk about this topic. And the Portuguese in prior centuries might not have known that they were doing wrong. But the modern whites of America, if they spent even a few minutes studying IQ and studying race, they would know that the race mixing that's being thrust upon them now by the Jews, they would know that that is not going to work, that it is bad, that it's going to lead to bad issues. So one should also cut the Portuguese some slack, just like we cut the Romans and others some slack. They did race mixing, but they did not fully understand what exactly the negativity is that comes from it. So let's go and take a bit of a look at the Portuguese. I'm going to show you some background, and then we're going to tackle this topic of race and what happened. On this map that you see here, this is a map of the world. And this map shows you the average IQ of people in various countries. And the average IQ of whites is 100. That is the sort of standard that was set in the past. But if you look on this map, you will see that there's one continent that just hits you in the face. And that continent is Africa. It is the stupidest continent on the planet. And this is Africa below the Sahara Desert. And look at it. These people have got the lowest IQ on the planet. You'll see that South America's got a better IQ. And if you were to go and look at the proportions of whites and non-whites in South America, you would understand why South America's got a higher IQ. But you can see that Europe especially, North America and Canada, those areas have got much higher IQs because they are white. So those of us who live in Southern Africa, we live among these people and we know what they are like. And these are the things that I'm going to be discussing with you today. Just a bit of background that I want to give everybody is people do not realize the size of Africa and southern Africa, where we whites fought to hang on to territory, and even the territory that we still have within our grasp. The territory that we fought for and fought over, and the territory that we still occupy even here in South Africa, this territory is actually enormous by European standards, even by American standards. These are big areas, and whites are few, and we controlled enormous chunks of territory. And if we could have kept that territory, we could probably have moved tens of millions of whites, even 100 million whites, into southern Africa. And we could have taken this place over, and we could have put 100 or 200 million whites here in southern Africa, and there'd still be lots and lots of room to spare. So if you look at this map in front of you, you can see that this is a map of Africa, and here you can see the United States would fit into the top portion of Africa easily. All of China would fit into Africa with tons of room to spare. India would fit in here with no problem. China and India, which have got unbelievably high populations of more than 1 billion people, would fit very comfortably into just a small portion of Africa. Africa is huge, and the territories that the whites had here are huge. And not only that, but these territories are unbelievably wealthy in minerals, and they've got great climates when it comes to farming and other stuff. We whites in southern Africa had the most wonderful chunk of territory, and it was ruled by us, and if we had just had more white people, we could have turned this place into the next United States. So I just wanted to show you that don't think that China and America and those places are big. Africa is much bigger, and Africa is much, much richer. And it's got a better climate, everything. Whites from Europe used to dominate this continent. We lost the biggest piece of real estate that we ever conquered in our entire existence as a race. The biggest and best piece of territory that we ever had, and we've lost most of it. And we really should get this territory back. Here's another map of Africa, and here you can see the United States. Here I've taken the United States and turned it around, and you can see that from the west coast right up to the east coast would comfortably fit inside southern Africa. You would see that South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, which used to be Rhodesia where I come from, and Mozambique. These places, southern Africa, that whites controlled, is almost as big as half of the United States. Here we were, 5 million whites, and we controlled a chunk of territory that's about half the size of the USA and unbelievably rich in minerals and farming output, and we lost this. But we did give a really good fight, and you will see more about that as I explain more in other videos. Just to put southern Africa in the perspective of Europe, if you look at Angola, you can comfortably fit France inside Angola, which was just one of the Portuguese territories. France would fit in there with lots of room to spare. If you took Germany as it is now, it's lost territory at the end of World War II, but if you took Germany as it is now, Germany would be almost the same size as Rhodesia, now known as Zimbabwe. If you took Texas, which the Americans like to boast about, if you took Texas, Texas would be almost the same size as Namibia. And in that country, there's lots of diamonds, and that country would fit inside Namibia, which at a point only had about 75,000 whites, 75 to 100,000 whites. If you took Great Britain would fit inside South Africa with tons of room to spare. South Africa is many times larger than Britain. The white population here is 4.2 million, yet Britain is like 60 million. You could easily move 100 million white people into South Africa, and we'd still have lots of space here. You could move 200 or 300 million people into Southern Africa, white people into Southern Africa, and there'd be lots of room to spare, and there'd be lots of space. So this is just to give you an idea of the scale of territories which we, the whites of Southern Africa, had and what we lost, and of what value it could be to the whites in the rest of the world. Now the Portuguese were the first whites to go out and start a colonial empire, and their colonial empire is summed up here on this map. They took an enormous chunk of South America, and then they had two big territories in Africa, Angola and Mozambique, enormous territories, and then they had little territory in Guinea-Bissau, there on the west coast of Africa. But their big territories, the ones that were really rich, were Angola and Mozambique. And of all of their territories that they had in modern times, because they had given up Brazil and Brazil had been independent, in the 20th century, the two territories that were the most important to the Portuguese were Angola and Mozambique. And Angola was known as the diamond. It was the sort of diamond of the Portuguese Empire. The Portuguese, at all costs, did not want to lose Angola. And it is in Angola that the most brutal fighting took place between the Portuguese and the blacks. And much later, the whites of South Africa also went into Angola and fought the biggest battles there that have been fought since World War II. Whites really tried to hang on to these territories at all costs. Now here is a map. Here is a map that the Portuguese had, and it says Portugal is not a small country. And on this map you can see Portugal with Mozambique with Angola. And Portugal's place in Europe plus Mozambique plus Angola would make up almost the same size as Europe. It would be almost the same size as the place where at least about 500 million or more whites live. That is the size of the territory that the Portuguese had here in Africa. And this territory is the territory that they fought for tooth and nail. For years, they fought for this territory like crazy. And the Rhodesians and South Africans also went and fought in big chunks of this territory. This will give you an idea of what we were fighting for and how important it could have been if we had won and kept it. Here are these territories placed on a map of Africa. You can see Angola on the west coast and Mozambique on the east coast. And then you can see Zimbabwe and South Africa there to the south of it. And these are the territories and the regions where they fought a war. The Portuguese fought three wars at the same time. When the Portuguese only had a population of 8 to 8.5 million people in Portugal in the 1960s and 70s, that group of 8 million people fought three wars at the same time in Africa. This was their Vietnam. They fought like crazy. And unlike the British, who gave up so easily and fled away from Malaysia and Kenya, the Portuguese fought like maniacs to hang in there with these territories. This was big. They really gave it their everything. And I will tell you more about them in other videos. So the Portuguese have this boast. They say, Portugal, the first European nation to establish colonial empire and the last to lose it. This is, of course, in recent centuries since the Renaissance. This does not include the times of the Vikings and maybe other Aryans who moved out of Europe in ancient prehistoric times, because whites from Europe, from France and Spain, may have actually left Europe more than 10,000 years ago to head off to America. That's another topic. But when we're looking at the Portuguese here, these are the people in modern times who set out from Europe, and they went to India, they got Mozambique, and they had all these different places right up to Macao, which they handed over to China in 1999. The Portuguese really tried to keep their empire. Now, what made the Portuguese tough in recent times was this guy, Salazar. Salazar was the Hitler of Portugal, just as Franco was the Hitler of Spain. This man was an economist, and this man was the man who ruled Portugal for more than 30 years. And this man was absolutely determined to never lose the Portuguese Empire. It is this man's willpower that is the sole reason that the Portuguese fought and fought and fought and fought in Africa. This man, in true fascist National Socialist style, this guy decided he's not giving up anything. And he pushed his people to the edge. He pushed them hard. And they would have won. They would have won. They were busy smashing the blacks. They had a plan that was definitely working. And here is a poster from the time of Salazar. And look at that little white girl and little white Portuguese boy. And look at them. What does that look like? Does that look like a Roman salute? Does that look like a Nazi salute? There you can see it. In 2006, I went to visit President P.W. Botha of South Africa. And this is the first time I've put out photographs that I took of my visit. And this is a picture I took of him. P.W. Botha was the last true leader of the whites of Southern Africa, of South Africa. And P.W. Botha was a very determined man. He also didn't want to give up South Africa. And he gets quite a bad rap. They like to treat him as one of the last of apartheid, and that he was a real hardcore guy. And as tough as he wasn't as tough as the Portuguese. This guy was prepared to fight here in Southern Africa, and he played a big role in building up the army of the whites. He played a big role in getting the whites to fight in Angola. He played a huge role in setting up the scene for the biggest battles that took place in Angola later. He spotted my website and he liked what I did on my website. I had many discussions with him. He phoned me a couple of times and then he invited me to his house. And this is from the time I went to see him. And these photos were taken about 2 to 3 weeks before he passed away. So I was among the last people who saw him alive. And this is one of a number of photos that I took of my visit to him. And here is a quote from P.W. Botha. He said, Nelson Mandela can rot in prison until he dies or I die, whichever takes longer. So that'll give you an idea that P.W. Botha was a pretty tough guy. But he wasn't as tough as the Portuguese. Here is another photo I took of P.W. Botha during my visit. And while I visited him, There were a number of things he told me which at the time did not make sense. There were things he mentioned about the Jews, about Israel. At that time, I'd not woken up to the danger of the Jews. And he mentioned a bunch of things about various topics that when he said things, I heard him say it, and I couldn't quite understand why he was saying it. And one of the things that he said to me at the time that kind of had me scratching my head was this thing that I've put here in the right. And in there I say, in 2006, P.W. Buerta told me that he said to the Portuguese, he went and he met with the Portuguese on many occasions. And he told me that he visited a particular Portuguese dignitary, and I can't remember exactly who it was that he visited, whether it was in Angola or whether it was in Portugal itself. And P.W. Buerta said to me that he told this guy, you Portuguese, you claim to be inclusive, but you people practice domination. And when he said to me, you people practice domination, I kind of scratched my head at the time. I heard him say that, but it didn't make sense to me. I didn't know in what way, and I didn't ask more. But much later, in recent years, when I started studying the Portuguese more closely and the wars between the blacks and the Portuguese, I now understand exactly what he was saying. And that is intended to give you an idea that P.W. Buerta was horrified. He was horrified by the brutality and the firmness of the Portuguese in the way that they were busy smashing the blacks down towards the end. So in this video, you're going to hear, we're going to talk about race mixing and whites having sex with blacks and having babies with them. And the other side of the story is that at the end of the story of the Portuguese, you had absolutely the opposite happening. The Portuguese were smashing the blacks. They did the most brutal things to the blacks, just as the blacks, first and foremost, did the most brutal things to them. So this is why the Portuguese, they don't like to talk about their wars, and everyone's been kind of quiet about it. And the Portuguese are all heartbroken, having lost their territory. Many Portuguese having lost their physical possessions, their houses, their money, their everything. And then on top of it, not only do they have race mixing in the past, but now, right at the end, they've got the opposite. They've got total brutality, total race war. It's vicious, it's brutal what the two sides are doing to each other. It's more brutal than anything that existed under apartheid or in Rhodesia. There's nothing to compare it to. And this should give you an idea that racial relations and how these games play out is not the way that liberals are telling you. That you can start off being all friendly with these other races and you can be nice to them. But in the end, race is real. And in the end, it's an ugly, ugly story. So that's just to give you an idea of how freaked out P.W. Buerta was. And he is known as one of the most hardcore Boer leaders that ever ruled in South Africa. And he was freaked out by this. He couldn't handle the way these Portuguese were smashing these blacks. They were cruel, man. They were brutal. But I'm not saying that the Portuguese were wrong in doing so. The Portuguese had every right to do what they did. And we'll get back to that topic. I'm totally in support of what the Portuguese did. Make no mistake about it. But I just want to show you that he was freaked out. And he was a guy who knew a lot about war. He was the Minister of Defense. He knew a heck of a lot about how wars really work. And he was freaked, man. So you saw that little picture I'd shown you, that poster of the Portuguese kids. Well, under Salazar, take a look at this. The Portuguese had a thing called Portuguese youth. And look at those little Portuguese boys there. And it operated just like the Hitler Youth. And a Portuguese guy says, our economy was very similar to the fascist Italy under Mussolini. So there you have an actual photograph of the Portuguese and these little Portuguese boys doing their Nazi salute. It is these Portuguese that fought the blacks. These are the ones who went and really fought for their little empire. So that's to just give you some background about the Portuguese. The Portuguese in the end were not liberal. In the end, everything liberal fell apart, just as it will do in America and just as it is already doing in South Africa. The liberal game will fall apart. In the end, there's going to be race war everywhere. Let's take a look at the actual article that my friend found on Stormfront that I'd read a long time ago, and I'm going to read this to you. And this is a fascinating thing. The first time I read this, I was quite astounded by it. I'd never heard of this stuff. So this article is called The Black Man's Gift to Portugal by Ray Smith. And this was written originally in 1971, and it's from a publication called The Best of Attack and National Vanguard Tabloid, issue number 6, 1971. So I'm not sure if Dr. William Pierce had a role in this, but here's the article, The Black Man's Gift to Portugal by Ray Smith. And the key issue here is we're going to be discussing race, but especially intelligence. This becomes the crux of the whole issue, is IQ. So here we go. We have all heard racial integration defended and advocated on the grounds that we have deprived our country of the benefit of the talents and abilities of the Negroes, that the Negroes have a positive contribution to make, and we have failed to take advantage of it. Because of our irrational prejudice against the Negroes, we have excluded them from full participation in American society, and we are told this is America's loss. Let me just pause there. This was written in 1971. At that time, the race wars were already raging in Southern Africa, and the Portuguese War was already very intense and had already been running for 11 years. Now, one of the big problems that hit all the whites of Southern Africa is that the Jews managed to get America to make a huge wrong turn. And that wrong turn was the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement was basically the moment when white America surrendered the issue of race. And let it be said that there were whites in America who resisted it. They even had to send their troops to go, and I think they used the National Guard to force integration between whites and blacks at schools and things. The Americans basically lost the war for race for all of white civilization in the 1960s. They lost it. And because they caved in on race, there was no big country that could stand firm on race. The Germans had been smashed, and by having Nazi Germany smashed, we'd already lost the best people who were advocates for race. And it shows you that America lost before long. So by the 1960s, the Americans had caved in. The American Nazi Party were among those who tried desperately to try and turn things around, but it was no longer possible. So This man writing in 1971, he's writing from the American perspective back then, which as you can see is the same old pack of lies that the liberals are still preaching to America now. And what I want to say to you as well from the African perspective is where this guy says, have a positive contribution to make and we have failed to take advantage of it. Somebody has asked me already to do a video about how we whites treated blacks in Africa. And I'm just going to say it in a very basic way here. We can go into it in more detail later. But I will explain to you that in Rhodesia, in South Africa, etc., when we were dealing with the non-whites, and if I think to myself growing up on a farm, the other whites who owned farms and who had businesses and who used blacks, we were using blacks for what we could get out of them. We looked at these blacks and we often tried to teach them all sorts of things because these blacks were working for us and we paid them what they were worth to us. We ourselves weren't extremely rich either, but we paid them what they were worth. And they weren't worth much to us. We found the blacks to be useful as a cheap form of mass labor. And we used them in vast numbers because they were so cheap. You will find that with the blacks, that their volume, their numbers, is always the thing that actually becomes the key reason why we use them, is because they are plenty. They are so plentiful and they themselves have so little that they can do by themselves. They don't have a better plan than we have. So they come to us because when they work for us, we actually have better ideas, and even though we pay them a pittance, that's first and foremost all that they are worth. And secondly, they themselves don't have a better plan. They themselves can't earn more money in any other way. These people are limited, and we would try to teach them all sorts of things. And then my father would say, oh, you know, I showed this guy this thing and that thing. And well, I told him to do this, and then he didn't do it, and he forgot, or he did that thing badly. This is how it went all the time. It's not like whites in Africa don't know what blacks can do. We know very well what they can do. We know their strengths, we know their weaknesses, through and through to the core. We know them better than any liberal, than any Jew. There was even a guy called... There was even a guy who ruled Rhodesia at a point. Sir Roy Welensky. He was a half Jew, half Boer. And he actually used to say, well, I swam in the streams with the black kids naked when I was a child. I know them backwards. And that is true. When we were kids, we sometimes even played with the black children. So it's not like we don't know what they are. We see them all the time. We know them. And we know what they're capable of and what they're not capable of. So when a liberal tells you, like in this sentence, he says, we have excluded them from full participation in American society, that the Negroes have a positive contribution to make and we have failed to take advantage of it. That is a blatant lie. Blatant, blatant lie. I will bet you that whites in every single country where they had blacks, even as slaves, I will bet you that whites did try to teach them additional things, and that the whites saw after a time, this isn't going to work. So these liberals make out like every black is an astronaut who was never given a chance. The opposite is actually true. They aren't that good. They aren't worth that much. And if they were worth more, If you actually look at their history in Africa, you'll see that the blacks used to live by themselves, and they more and more came into our society in order to work for us, because by working for us, the pittance that we paid them was still more than what they were able to do by themselves. That is how it really worked. So let's continue. The lesson of history. In view of the fact that we are now being forced to integrate with the Negroes and grant them equal participation, it might be instructive to look at other countries which have integrated with Negroes in the past to see what the Negroes gave them. What is the historical evidence? There is a wealth of material here for study in such places as Haiti, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Brazil, etc. But the nearest parallel to the United States today is Portugal in the 16th century. It may come as a surprise to hear of the Negroes' role in the history of Portugal, for, in spite of all the emphasis on black studies in our schools, no one seems to talk about the blacks' contribution to Portugal, neither the Portuguese, the blacks, nor our modern historians, who are rewriting our history books to make the Negroes look good. It takes considerable digging in books written before our modern era of forced integration to uncover the story of Portugal. Let me pause there. That's exactly what I've experienced. Exactly as this American was saying, this is the untold story. Nobody talks about the blacks and the Portuguese. In fact, if we look at everything from the entire Portuguese experience from the beginning to the end, which includes the race wars that I'm talking about, you will see every single thing that a liberal has told you can be refuted. In fact, the wars of Southern Africa, if you look at what the whites have done all across Southern Africa, not just the Portuguese, but if you see the various ways in which we've all experimented with blacks, used blacks, organized with blacks, had treaties with blacks, fought alongside blacks, had blacks as allies, as military allies. We've done everything that you can do with these people. There's nothing we haven't done. And at the end of it, we know that they're not worth much. And I suspect that especially the Portuguese experience with the blacks is a problem for everybody. For the Portuguese, it's bad because they feel terrible having lost their colonies. But they also feel guilty about the nasty things they did in the end when they were hanging on for dear life for their colonies. But clearly, this topic of Portugal and the blacks, I think the liberals and the Jews steer clear of it for many reasons. And those are exactly the reasons why we're going to look into this topic. And as this writer is saying, in our modern era of forced integration. That is what happened in America in the 1960s. Oh, the wonderful civil rights movement had to be enforced at gunpoint. That's how unpopular it was in America. But it was a battle the Americans lost. If the Americans had not lost that battle, then they could easily have stood up on the world stage and said, we support South Africa, we support Portugal, we support Rhodesia. But because they lost it inside, the game was over. Now it's small countries, small groups of whites hanging in there for dear life. Poets and explorers. By the middle of the 16th century, Portugal had risen to a position analogous to that of the United States today. Portugal was the wealthiest, most powerful country in the world, with a large empire and colonies in Asia, Africa, and America. The Portuguese people were like the Elizabethans in England, poets and explorers, a race of highly civilized, imaginative, intelligent, and daring people. They showed great potential and had already made important contributions to the Renaissance. But unlike England and other European powers, Portugal had a large and rapidly growing Negro population, and at the same time its white population was declining. Portugal began the Negro slave trade after encountering Negroes in its explorations and forays into Africa. Portugal brought the first black slaves to Lisbon in 1441, and they continued to be imported in such numbers that by 1550, the population of Portugal was 10% Negro. The US is 13 to 14% Negro today. Defilement of the blood. See, now we're getting into the hardcore stuff. There was no taboo or injunction against sexual relations with the Negroes, and the Negroes' blood soon became assimilated into the general population through miscegenation, so that today there are no Negroes as such in Portugal. The present-day population of Portugal is described by the New York Times Encyclopedic Almanac 1971 as follows. Ethnic composition. The people are a mixture of various ethnic strains, including Celtic, Arab, Berber, Phoenician, Carthaginian, Lusitanian, and other racial influences. The present population is one of the most homogeneous in Europe, with no national minorities. Note that the Negro strain is not listed by the New York Times. I also just want to pause and mention that even the Romans were also busy having sex with their slaves. You're going to find that this topic of sex starts coming up when you get into South America with the Spaniards and so forth. The Spaniards going there without their white women, and then they start having sex with the locals. There was also a little bit of it in the early days in Southern Africa, when the whites came to South Africa. There was a bit of it. There's always a bit of it going on. What you can see in Portugal today is the product of uniform, non-selective mixing of the 10% Negroes and 90% whites into one homogeneous whole. In effect, it is a new race, a race that has stagnated in apathy and produced virtually nothing in the last 400 years. The Encyclopedia Britannica, 11th edition, 1911, in its article on Portugal states, "The Portuguese intermarried freely with their slaves, and this infusion of alien blood profoundly modified the character and physique of the nation. It may be said without exaggeration that the Portuguese of the Age of Discoveries and the Portuguese of the 17th and later centuries were two different races." Let me pause there. This has probably happened to whites everywhere. In fact, it has happened in other places. The Mediterranean whites have also been doing some race mixing. And you'll find that this is an issue all around the borders of Europe, but also once the whites move outside of Europe, the whites also end up with a bit of race mixing. But the whites of Europe, if you go to like the Finns and the Hungarians, you'll find that their DNA is slightly affected by Asians. So the people in Central Europe, like the Germans, they are in many ways protected because around them are other whites on all sides. And the Scandinavians are okay because their borders generally end up in the Arctic and the sea. So they don't have much exposure to other races except for the Finns. So there is always some miscegenation taking place, especially when you start bringing races together, especially when they start sharing the same space. So the notion that the Portuguese changed in some way, this won't be the first time it's happened to whites. It will have happened in other places. Rome, Persia, ancient Egypt. These processes happen again and again. And one of my American friends has raised the issue with me. He said that we whites, we don't stand a chance. Once we start mixing, that's the end of our society. This is the biggest problem that all whites have faced, is that once this thing starts, the civilization ends up collapsing. So I have one American friend, and he says to me, a guy I know very well, he's very well read, and he says to me, Jan, there's no hope. We're finished. It's game over. But there is something that I will mention at the end, because there is another twist to this. So, let's carry on. People without a future. The contribution of this new race to civilization in terms of literature, art, music, philosophy, science, etc., has been practically nothing. Portugal today is the most backwards country in Europe. The illiteracy rate is 38%, in the US 2.2%, Japan 1.0%. The infant mortality in Portugal is 59.2 per 1,000 births, versus 12.9% for Sweden, US 20%, France 20%. The workers' wages are the lowest in Western Europe, the equivalent of a little more than $2 a day. Portugal is a forgotten land, bypassed by the tourists and shunned by the scholars. It is a sad country, known mainly for its plaintive, mournful fado music, nostalgic music that looks to the past and sees no future. Let me just pause there for a second. One of the things you've got to remember about Europe is that you're dealing with the largest grouping of whites on the planet, and all of Europe is very dynamic and very competitive, and it can easily be that anything that damages the population even slightly, puts them at a disadvantage compared to the others. That can be the case. So let's continue. Portugal and America. Because now we're getting down to the next issue. In spite of the close similarity between the situation of Portugal in the 1550s and the United States today, we cannot predict that the outcome of our racial integration with Negroes will be exactly the same. The historical significance, however, is that any country, society, or group which has integrated to any appreciable extent with the Negroes has suffered drastically in its ability to maintain a civilized standard of living and its ability to compete with others. There is no evidence that any other country ever gained anything from integration with Negroes. Well, let me pause there. In the case of ancient Egypt, that is definitely true. It should be pointed out that the Negro-white ratio 1:9 in Portugal in the 1550s does not represent the final percentage of Negro genes. For the Negro element was rapidly increasing while the white element was declining. The male whites were leaving Portugal in large numbers, sailing, settling in the colonies, and marrying native women. The government encouraged this. Most of the Negro slaves brought to Portugal were adult males. The population was thus unbalanced, an excess of white women and Negro males, and a shortage of white men. Chronicles of the era relate that the Portuguese women kept Negro slaves as pets. They also married them. Let me pause there. This was the part that blew me away when I first read it, where they say Portuguese women kept Negro slaves as pets. You see, the Romans also had slaves who were their sex pets. And the sexual drive is a whole other story all by itself, and it's a hectic topic. We're getting into really sensitive topics here, but let's continue with this because we will look at things from various angles. The situation in the USA today is not too different. The radical chic whites have their black pets. Let me pause on that one. It has come to my attention that in modern times that there genuinely are women in America and even a few in Europe there are genuinely white women who've been taken in by a steady Jewish propaganda that talks about blacks being superior males. And they play on the fact that the black Americans are from slaves, and so they normally bought big slaves, muscular blacks. And so those blacks are bigger and more manly appearing. And there are white women right now, in this age of the internet, there are white women who actually believe that these blacks are superior. And they do it basically just on the visual appeal and on propaganda. They don't know about genetics and genes and intelligence. They don't know about that. So they just look at that and they just think, ah, good sex. But they don't know what's going to come out of it. So there's a genuine ignorance as well. That's what I'm trying to get at. So let's continue. Our percentage of the Negro element today does not represent the final amalgam. The Negro birth rate is almost twice as high as that of the whites. There is no white population explosion in America or anywhere in the world. It is all colored. The colored woman has the children. The white women are on the pill or have abortions. What the final amalgam in America will be, we cannot say, but if the trend continues, the Negro element will be much more than the 14%. Why did Portugal integrate? The British, French, Dutch, Spanish, and Portuguese all engaged in the Negro slave trade, but only Portugal brought them to their own country. The question arises, why did Portugal so willingly accept racial integration with Negroes while other European countries kept the Negroes out and maintained their racial integrity? What was the climate of opinion, the current ideology, teaching, or propaganda that led the Portuguese to depart from the behavior of the other countries? What was the difference about Portugal? You will not find the answer to these questions in our modern history books and recently published encyclopedias, for the whole subject of the decline has become taboo. You will have to dig into older sources and discover your own answers. You might also ask yourself why America is accepting racial integration while most of the rest of the world is racist. Why are we different? You see, he's posing the question with regard to the United States. Why is the United States so much more willing to go down this path? So he says, the role of the Jew. One significant difference in Portugal before its fall in the 16th century was that it had become a haven for Jews. For several centuries, the Jews had more wealth, influence, and more power in Portugal than in any other European country. In 1497, at Spain's request, the Jews were asked to leave Portugal or be converted. Most of them became normal Christians and remained. However, by 1550, many of the Jews were voluntarily leaving. They saw the writing on the wall. The Encyclopedia Britannica edition of 1885 notes that even observers like the Dutchman Kleinarts saw that in spite of all its wealth and seeming prosperity, the kingdom of Portugal was rotten at the core and could not last. Let me pause there. That could be a description of the United States today. And there is a little bit of that in Southern Africa too, in apartheid, in the final days of apartheid. Not quite as bad, but you have this appearance of wealth, but the wealth at the end is the wealth before the fall. America has also served as a haven for the Jews. The Jews in America today have risen to a greater position of power, wealth, and influence than they have ever had in any other country. They dominate the newspapers, book publishing, television, and radio, movies, universities, all of their educational media, as well as the commercial life of the country. The Jews have always proselytized for racial integration in Portugal, America, or in whatever country they have been, for without such a climate of tolerance of alien races, they themselves would not be accepted. It has therefore been in the Jews' interest to suppress evidence which would lead people to reject alien races. Let me pause there. I think this guy hits the nail on the head so unbelievably accurately in this portion of the sentence. Let me read this one particular sentence again, because I myself have been thinking along exactly these lines, that this is the key. This is the whole key to multiculture. So let's read it again. The Jews have always proselytized for racial integration in Portugal, America, or in whatever country they have been. And here's the key. For without such a climate of tolerance of alien races, they themselves would not be accepted. I'm going to repeat that little portion. For without such a climate of tolerance of alien races, they themselves would not be accepted. That is the secret here. And if you even look at the whole flooding of Europe with Muslims, if you dig a little bit, you'll see that there are Jews who, in speaking to other Jews, have said the following. They've said that when the Muslims come into Europe, the Muslims are going to become a bigger problem than the Jews. So the Jews are bringing in people that they know will be a bigger problem for the whites, because then the focus of the whites is going to be on these other non-whites. It's not going to be on the Jews. And that's the key issue here. These Jews know that whites are going to expel them. They know it. That's what World War II. If you look at the time just before World War II, if you look at the effects of the rise of Nazism, National Socialism, Fascism, you'll see there was this rise of racial awakening in Europe that came as a direct consequence of the Bolshevik Revolution and its consequences. And it was spreading beyond Germany. You even had Poland and other countries where people were starting to stand up against the Jews. The Jews were heading towards being expelled from literally all of Europe, and also even America and Britain. Even in America and Britain, you would find that there were whites who were aware of Jews and the dangers of the Jews. And by managing to get the Germans and Italians destroyed in World War II, the Jews saved themselves from an expulsion from Europe. But that is where this game was going, and the Jews were trying to head this thing off. That is why they set out to destroy Germany. They knew that Germany was the heart of all resistance to Jews. And so these Jews fear expulsions. They've been expelled hundreds and sometimes thousands of times, depending on how much detail you go into it. They've been expelled from 109 countries, or at least one of the lists is 109 expulsions. But I've seen lists that are much longer. I've seen lists that are more than 360 and so forth. These Jews know the whites are going to kick them out, and the Jews need to make the whites tolerant of others so that the Jews themselves can stay there. The Jews themselves do not want to exist alone. That's the other thing. There's the dysfunctionality of the Jews, which we haven't discussed. The Jews cannot exist by themselves, but the whites can. And so whites are always quite willing to kick people out, but Jews need these other people around them. And so they are the ones that they are protecting themselves. That's the game they're playing. But I think that this man absolutely nailed it with that sentence. Or let's go to that part of the sentence again. For without such a climate of tolerance of alien races, they themselves would not be accepted. And that is the heart and core of the Jewish issue. So let's carry on. He says, history rewritten. Our encyclopedias and history books have been purged and rewritten. I totally agree. More than you can believe. I'll even add that. More than you can believe. If you look up Portugal in the 1970 edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, you will not find anything about the role of the Negroes and Jews in the history of Portugal, or anything about the decline and fall of Portugal. The Jews are briefly mentioned among others who exerted various influences over the territory, which in the 13th century acquired the frontiers of modern Portugal. There is no elaboration of what this influence was. The Negroes have been eliminated entirely. They are not listed with the other ethnic groups in the ancestry of the Portuguese people. In the entire 15-page article, there is no clue that Negroes were ever present in Portugal, or that they had any role or influence in Portuguese history. The 1970 edition of the Encyclopedia Americana also makes no mention of the presence of Negroes in Portugal. In all these sources you'll find facts, that is names and dates, but with no meaning and no indication of what actually happened or why. However, if you can manage to find some older sources, you can learn a great deal about the history of Portugal. An article on Portugal in the 1911 edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica contains more real information than you can get in reading 100 history books of more recent vintage. From our point of view, this article would probably be called racist, but the point is that the presence and activities of the Negroes and Jews are recorded. The information is there, and you can draw your own conclusions. The article is actually pro-Jewish. There's also a scholarly analysis of the factors in the decline and fall of Portugal, with the author tending to blame the Inquisition, the Jesuits, and anti-Semitism. However, neither his conclusions nor his bias prevents him from including factors or information which might lead the reader to a different conclusion. Our modern scholars and authorities eliminate information which might lead the reader to the wrong conclusion. So that's very interesting stuff he writes. You see, the Jews are constantly hiding their role in lots and lots of things. And normally where there's lots of commerce, you're going to find Jews. And you'll find it with the Dutch Empire, the British Empire, all these overseas empires, you'll find Jews all over the show. The Dutch and the British, two examples. Then it goes on. Our modern scholars and authorities eliminate information which might lead the reader to the wrong conclusion, and he's put wrong in inverted commas. Suppressing the evidence. The 1964 edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica still briefly lists the Negroes and Jews, along with others, as Portuguese racial elements, but with no details or elaborations. By 1966, the Negroes have vanished completely. So, lots of editing. Now, what has happened between 1911 and 1966 that makes us purge and rewrite history in such a way? Have we decided that race no longer is or ever was a factor in history? This cannot be since, quote, black studies are flourishing at our universities. Historians are supposedly trying hard to discover all they can about the role of the Negroes in history. In a trial, a lawyer tries to suppress evidence that would be damaging to his client. He tries to prevent this evidence from reaching the jury. Our modern historians and scholars are trying to suppress evidence. The Negro is his client. We are the jury. And we must not reach the wrong verdict. Let me pause there. I think this guy's onto a very important thing by saying all these things, because as you go and study things, you will see that Jews are busy censoring things like crazy. We need to stop reading anything that comes out of the mouth of a Jew, really. Jews edit to such a degree, it's horrific, actually. And we need to preserve everything we can. Because I myself am finding that in South Africa, oh man, there's so much hidden. And I bet you in every single Western country, you're going to find lots and lots and lots of hidden stuff about Jews. Jews are busy everywhere, and whenever they get the chance, these people are busy rewriting history to make them look good and to hide things that might give whites the wrong ideas. That notion, definitely true. This, of course, reveals what the liberal establishment really thinks of Negroes, that they are inferior and must be protected. The evidence must be suppressed. The New York Times et al. Is a lawyer, a well-paid, who knows his client did it, but tried to get him off. Totally agree. Totally agree. New York Times can't trust a Jew, as always. Liberals in the United States often become very self-righteous and superior. When the former Soviet Union purged and rewrote its encyclopedias, eliminating from its history current undesirables, making them unpersons, we ridicule their lack of objectivity and irrational scholarship. But we do exactly the same thing when we rewrite the history of Portugal and make unpersons of the Negroes and Jews. In terms of rewriting and deliberately falsifying history, we are much closer to Orwell's 1984 than the Soviet Union ever was. Big Brother protects us from dangerous knowledge. So next section, Quo Vadis, Aryan Man. There is a great need for the American people to know what happened in Portugal in the 16th century, for we are repeating their experience. We are in the same predicament, at the same juncture, at the same crossroads in history. There is an amazing similarity between our situations today and Portugal's in the 1500s. Shall we take the same road? Travelers from other European countries were amazed to see so many Negroes in 16th century Lisbon, as are travelers today in Washington, D.C. Let me pause there. Yes, when I went to Washington, D.C. in 2019, I just about fell on my back when I saw all the blacks there. I was reeling from the notion that a country like America, that its capital should be black. There are blacks everywhere. The blacks outnumber the whites there. It's unbelievable. So, very, very good point by this guy. I've seen it with my own eyes. Our own capital is a large percentage black, and, as was the case in Lisbon, the Negroes do all the manual labor and service jobs. The 1911 Encyclopedia Britannica comments, while the country was being drained of its best citizens, hordes of slaves were imported to fill the vacancies, especially into the southern provinces. Manual labor was thus discredited. The peasants sold their farms and emigrated, or flocked to the towns, and small holdings were merged into vast estates. Manual labor has been discredited for many white people these days, and Negroes fill these jobs. We are too good for it. Let me pause there. That is a huge problem among whites in Africa. Huge problem. It's a huge, huge thing. And this is where the Germans are different, where they've raised up the importance of labor. But we'll get back to these topics. I have some other comments. Americans alienated. The American people are also leaving the land and flocking to the cities or metropolitan areas. And our small farms have been replaced by huge mechanized farms. Let me pause there. I myself have wondered and said it in the past, and I'll say it again. Those huge mechanized farms in the United States, are those mechanized farms being planned by Jews as a way of also driving whites off rural areas. In South Africa, we now have the mega farmers, also huge mechanized things. Same thing. The Jew is at work, my friends. The Jew is at work. So he continues, if we had any colonies, many American men would gladly immigrate to them. Many are leaving anyway for Canada, Australia, and Europe. Those who remain feel rootless and displaced from their jobs, their country, even their families. It is difficult to feel any sense of belonging to what America has become today. Stout hearts and pure blood. In analyzing the catastrophe which befell Portugal, the historian H. Morse Stevens, in his book Portugal, written in 1891, concludes, they, the Portuguese, were to produce great captains and writers, and were able to become the wealthiest nation in Europe. But that same 16th century was to see the Portuguese power sink, and the independence won by Alfonso Henriquez and maintained by John the Great vanish away. It was to see Portugal, which has been one of the greatest nations of its time, decline in fame and become a mere province of Spain. Hand in hand with increased wealth came corruption and depopulation, and within a single century after the epoch-making voyage of Vasco da Gama, the Portuguese people, tamed by the Inquisition, were to show no sign of their former hardihood. This is the lesson that the story of Portugal in the 16th century teaches, that the greatness of a nation depends not on its wealth and commercial prosperity, but upon the thews and sinews and the stout hearts of its people. This is rather old-fashioned language, but what Stevens is saying is that by the end of the 16th century, the quality of the people was lacking. Other European nations suffered military defeat, but continued to grow and develop. Portugal stopped dead in its tracks. It had nothing to build on. Portugal can now only look nostalgically to the past. We Americans must use this information as insight into our future. Is it too late to save the white Aryan people of Portugal? It is too late to save the white Aryan people of Portugal, but we must save ourselves. So that's the end of the article, but there are many things in here, and these topics become very complicated. So I want to raise one issue here. He cites, for example, that the Portuguese grew rich, and they created this great empire, and how awesome that was. And this is the same as Hitler in his admiration for the British Empire. He admires the great British Empire and its achievements. But what nobody is mentioning is how much of this economic success of the Portuguese Empire, the British Empire, the Dutch Empire is due to Jews and whites working together. That the Jews are the economic element. That what appears to be wealth comes from the Jews and their Jew games. And then the whites basically create the infrastructure of the empire. They create the physical entity. They go, they do the exploration, they do the conquest, they build the things, they set up law and order, they have their legal systems, they have their army, they have their police. And then once whites have created this thing, then whites themselves have created a wonderful thing that they intend for their use. But then the Jew slips in and the Jew makes the most use of this thing. And how much of the so-called wealth of these empires is due to Jews networking with other Jews and the whites doing the killing and the whites setting up the infrastructure? Because you'll find that in South Africa as well, that the whites had to do the exploring, the conquering, the fighting, the building, and then others came. When the others come, that's when there's this so-called prosperity. But among that, those others are the Jews as well. And how much of that prosperity is Jews networking with other Jews in other parts of the world? So the whites create the infrastructure. The whites use that infrastructure to some effect. But a great portion of that infrastructure may be due to Jews liaising with other Jews. And the one Jew saying to the other one, yeah, it's okay, you can deal with me. You know, we got these people under control. You know, this is our place, it's fine, let's do trade. And then the Jews start networking. Because you'll see this again and again. You'll see it with the British Empire, the Dutch Empire. You can look at it at modern America today. Look at all the crazy things and how many of those crazy ideas are Jewish ideas. So it's like there's this period of wealth. And Britain itself, very hooked on the notion of wealth and money. But how much of that is real? How much of that is real and how much is due to Jews playing their games, Jews coming up with all kinds of weird ideas? And the people, even the whites of South Africa, they're still locked into that commercial line of thinking from just 30 years ago, 30, 40 years ago. And I think that also wealth fools people and people start becoming much more easy to manipulate. That when there's lots of money flowing around, people kind of lose their ability to perceive dangers and they become overconfident and they just let things go. So one thing that I definitely want to raise is how much of so-called wealth in the modern empires of the Western world, how much of that wealth is due to Jews trading with other Jews, because Jews have got their networks all over the world. And so we think that this is just natural, but it's not totally natural. Jews are controlling it. Jews are behind it. But without the white infrastructure, without the whites creating the state, these modern empires all have a very similar structure to them. And I ask myself how much of it is due to Jews bringing in their networks, then they're networking. And then the whites think that it's just all a result of their efforts. But actually, there's some Jewish stuff at work here. The Romans were different. You had a different kind of empire with the Romans. Those people were working the land, they were trading, but they were also fighting. And they also had lots of children. I think that modern Western empires in recent centuries are different to the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire was a more blood and soil type of empire. The kind of state that Hitler was creating was also a similar thing. It was like a blood and soil type thing. And this wild commercialism of modern centuries, I think this wild commercialism has got a bigger Jew element in it than people realize. And that is why the British and the Dutch, I've had Dutch friends saying, oh, you know, I'm so proud of being Dutch. You know, we achieved so much. But how much of Dutch success was due to the fact that Jews from Spain and other places went to go and live in the Netherlands? So, you know, what did the Jews bring? The Jews seem to always bring money. That's what the Jews always seem to bring. Is they bring money and trade. And then, of course, it also brings a lot of other weird stuff, nation-destroying stuff. But that is what I'm trying to get at, is that there are different kinds of empires. And the modern empires, which includes the United States now, these modern empires are based on a total commercialism, a mad, insane commercialism that's not the same as the Roman Empire. That empire was more a nationalistic type state. Even though it became an empire, it was still an empire where the men went and worked in the fields. Okay, they brought in slaves, true. But the men fought. The men played a big role in holding that state together. So that is something you need to look at. And when I look at commercial success these days, I keep asking myself, how much of what is happening is due to Jews, and how much of what is happening is, let's call it real? How much of it is due to Jews messing with perceptions? That is a very important thing. That maybe when whites work together, they can get things going to a certain point. But whites are not naturally, I don't think whites are naturally that commercial, actually. But you'll see the Jew is wildly commercial. There's a no-holds-barred attitude there. And nowadays, that has come to roost, especially in the United States, where everyone's corrupt, corrupt to the highest levels. You get Joe Biden's brother getting contracts for $1.5 billion in industries that he's got absolutely no qualification for. So this is what the Jew kind of brings. And I think when he brings wealth, you must be careful about how much of that wealth is real and how much of it is just Jewish playing. So that covers that article. And I think that guy has got a lot of insights into what happened. And I want to show you a few more things. Now, let's try and see if we can see with modern science how much of what he's saying is possibly true. So the one way I thought of trying to prove or disprove what this guy is saying from his sources is to look at IQ, to look at intelligence. So I found some maps. This is the first map. I'll show you another map. I found maps of IQ in Europe to try and see if there is something that could prove this to us. Because the other thing is, if these people were interbreeding with the blacks, what percentage of their genes comes from the blacks now? I have heard whites in Switzerland, for example, who are supporters of my work, they've said to me that they refer to the Spanish and the Portuguese as the brown people, which I think is a little bit overplayed, but for the pure Europeans, that could be possible, that they can see these people are just, these are whites, but they're just very slightly different, and it's visible to the naked eye. So, you know, what can you tell? And the big thing is IQ. So this particular map is a map that I found, which they say is average IQ of young people in Europe by country. So this is modern, and it could include foreigners that have come in, and it's based on young people. So the non-whites may be breeding more. So it's hard to use this as an exact calculation of IQ, but you'll notice something interesting here. You'll see that in Eastern Europe, the young whites have got a much lower IQ. And then you see Portugal there. You've got maybe a 5% drop between Portugal and Spain in youth. And you see a bit of a drop between France and Spain. But let's get another map. I think this map is more accurate. This seems to be done with much more scientific precision. And on this map, let's take a closer look. My Boer Nazi pal used to tell me that the French also have got a colored element to them. So if we look, for example, in this map, and we look to see who are the most intelligent whites, then the highest IQ according to this map. But notice, this map also says, differences of just a few IQ points may not be significant due to statistical and sampling errors. So it is possible that if you're looking at 2 or 3%, that these maps might not be dead on because it's got to do with the sampling. But I would say, I think if you get 5 percentage points difference, then you're looking at something that's meaningful. So that could point to something. But even so, let's take a look at this. We know that the whites of Iceland are pure, that there are no non-whites there, etc. And on this map, those whites are rated as 99, an IQ of 99. So 1 percentage point lower than the norm. We can see that Holland, the Netherlands, is 100 dead on. We can see that Finland is 101. The cleverest people seem to be in Finland. If we look at Germany, we see 1 point down. Then we can see 1 percentage point down in France. So this could be because of the French also having a bit of a more lax attitude to non-whites. Then you can see from the French to the Spanish, another point down. And then here it shows the Portuguese as 94. If you go to Italy, where a lot of clever people come from, you'll see that Italy has got an IQ of 96. You see, it could also be that within the country, depending on the region, that you've got lower IQs in one part of the country than others. So it could be that maybe a certain part of Italy has got a higher IQ than another part. The same could be true of Portugal. But anyway, be that as it may, let's use these numbers. These numbers give us something. So if you look at Eastern Europe, for example, you'll see Eastern Europe, according to this, there's a lower IQ. So there could be other countries where there are other problems, and it may relate to Turkey, for example. May relate to people coming from Turkey. But this is what I was trying to get at regarding the Europeans, is that you get the Germans, who are the Central Europeans, and perhaps to an extent maybe even the British and Scandinavians. These are the people who don't have direct contact with other races. And so for them to stay purer is easier because they've got like other whites who are their buffers. And if you look at DNA, for example, you'll notice the changes in DNA occur across the borders of Europe. That as you start putting people closer together, it starts leading to this interbreeding. This, there is a certain amount of it. The question really is how much damage is there to the gene pool? How much damage is there, and can the damage be undone? And in my view, I think that the damage can be undone because you're looking at topics like eugenics and breeding. The fact that there are problems with IQ among even these people in Europe, and this is where the vast majority of our people live, and Europe as a whole is the cleverest part of our race, make no mistake. I do find it a bit hard to believe that Germany has an IQ of 99. I think they have a higher IQ, and also look there at Switzerland 100. So it's the more isolated places that have got higher IQs. Maybe for some of the people like the Finns, not quite sure why the Finns have got a higher IQ, whether adding Asian into them pushes up their IQ, because Asian IQ is also quite high. Asian IQ matches white IQ. But you definitely do have a bit of a problem with everybody who's like on the edges. And it could be that this guy's got a point, that maybe the IQ of the whites of Europe, or the whites of Portugal, maybe the IQ of the whites of Portugal have been affected by a bit of this intermixing. But I don't see it as a death sentence, and I don't see it as the end, because we now know how to fix things. We've got eugenics, and the one thing you must remember that whites don't do, there are many errors that whites make with regard to breeding. And these are things that need to be dealt with in a sort of a cultural way. And Hitler saw these things as well. Is that whites have been breeding animals for thousands of years. For thousands of years. And nobody has bred animals the way we have. And we can take any animal and turn it into almost any other animal, literally. All the breeds of cattle, horses, dogs, cats, whites have bred those animals like crazy. And even whites here in Africa have taken animals and bred specific strains of them. In Rhodesia, you get the Rhodesian Ridgeback. But in Rhodesia, the farmers were even creating a special type of cow that was going to be a Rhodesian breed of cow. Nobody mentions this. I think the cow was called a Thuli. The farmers were taking breeds of cattle and were starting to create another breed of cow that would have been totally suitable for Rhodesia, that could handle the climate, etc. And they were busy breeding this animal. And it was an animal that was tougher, could withstand the local conditions, etc. Now, the funny thing about whites as a whole is that whites can take any animal and breed it into almost any other animal. And the variations of dogs, cats, horses, and so forth is unbelievable. Go and look at what whites have done with horses. And you want to tell me that we cannot do this to ourselves? That we cannot work out a system to breed ourselves back? And I will bet you that if you study this, the actual details of breeding, that even within a country like Portugal, that you will find that there are large numbers enough of people of good genes that you can actually fix all the genes in the country without even needing to import other white genes. I'm absolutely certain that this can be done, because look at what we do with plants and everything. Our big problem is that we do not apply logic to our breeding. We do our breeding based on emotion only instead of logic. And if we had a better attitude towards our breeding, we would be able to produce lots and lots of the right people. And we could still do it without having to do nasty things like castrating people and so forth. I am absolutely convinced that you can fix this. We've got so many farmers who have not even been studying science, who can breed things and fix things. And you want to tell me we can't fix ourselves as a race? If we had to take proper scientists and look at our countries and say to ourselves, what do we need to fix ourselves? First thing that must go up is IQ. First and foremost thing that must go up is IQ. And all these other things, we need to look at those genes and say, are there any genes that we actually got that were actually useful? Because there may be a couple of genes that were useful. And then you say to yourself, okay, what are the things that are bad? We need to get these things out. We need to fix it. If you want to see a people who interbred to the point of almost self-destruction, it's the Jews. Jews are so interbred that Jews suffer from unique illnesses. Unique, horrific illnesses that nobody else has. Jews are more interbred and more fucked up than any whites. And Jews are still managing to try and survive. I think that all of these problems can be solved. And by the way, the IQ difference of the Jews of Israel, in one thing that I saw, was the Jews of Israel are 5 IQ points lower than that of America. The Jews of Israel are like 95. And yet you'll hear the Jews saying, oh, the Jews are so clever, Jews are so clever. Total rubbish. So I think that first and foremost, this to be solved is not a difficult problem. We've got the science, we've got the knowledge. What we need to have in place is the men and women and the correct attitude to correct this in terms of breeding properly. And I'm sure that you could come up with a very humane breeding program that would still give everybody a chance of having a sex life, having children, having a family, without it impacting them in a negative way, and you would still have an end result that works for everybody. Because all you need to do is give additional incentives to certain people or certain groups of people to breed more. And you can have everybody having big families, but the ones with the better genes, you could in various ways get those genes into people and either have more of them breed, etc. I honestly don't see this as a problem that can't be solved for our race. In fact, I would even go so far as to say that I think other races will later be trying to get this kind of data from us. This kind of stuff about breeding, this is stuff that we should actually classify as top secret in our race and not share this with anybody else. And we should fix it. We should go about fixing it. The other thing that this guy doesn't mention in his article is big families. 100 years ago, there were families in Ireland, in other parts of Europe, in and among the Boers. Boers used to have huge families. I'm talking 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, up to 12 children. Boers used to have up to 12 children. One woman has given birth to 12 children. Really, the notion that this cannot be solved, this is nonsense. It can be solved. We just need to create the proper structures for it so that a woman can get pregnant, her child can be looked after, she can be looked after, and all those sorts of things. I don't see these things as problems at all. And anyway, we all breed too little. We don't have children, we don't have wives, but we can even solve this even in the way that we handle our things. We don't have to always just have the fixed family. We could allow for other things. We could set up something that allows women to have children even if they're not married. There are many, many ways around this. To solve this through science, ethics, and just a bit of forethought and so forth is not difficult. And I think you could still do it because, as it is, all whites have too few children. So, if we could get all whites to have 4 and 5 children per woman at the least, and then you still have other selected men and women who we make use of their genes in a higher proportion, so that let's say there's a man or a woman and they got specific genes and they're not married, or they are married, but you get them to go and have children with somebody else. You have like a state level plan to pushing up the IQ, pushing up the population. Honestly, I don't see that this can't be solved among ourselves. We are such experts at doing this with animals. We do this with animals with the greatest of ease. And the changes that we affect in animals are enormous. A bulldog and a collie may look utterly different, and yet those things were bred by whites. And we can produce all kinds of animals. The farming aspect, this stuff, the differences between dog breeds and humans. Dog breeds have got bigger physical differences than humans. And you want to tell me we can't fix this? Our big problem is that we don't have a ethical way. We don't have a system of solving this. We don't take these things as national priorities. You should have like a Ministry of Human Development, which looks at the population, finds out what's wrong, and says, how are we going to fix it? And you could even go and find specific peoples or groups of peoples in other countries, other white countries, and say, you know what? We'd like some of that DNA in our country, and so on. I think this is easily solved. Easily solved. And I even spoke to a woman recently. She's an Afrikaans woman. She married a man who's in jail. He's in jail for the Boeremag. She married a man who's in jail. And what this woman did was she got permission to be artificially inseminated. So she's now had a child. She's got a child with a husband whom she's never had sex with. And that is possible. The problem, our only problem, is that white women are not having babies. And we need to see to it that white women are having babies. And there are also another aspect of this is sexual drives. What is driving these men and women to have sex with non-whites? And how can this be fixed? That also needs some fixing. You know, there are things that you need. Napoleon said, for example, that if you didn't have brothels, that women would be attacked in the streets. There are many issues here that are personal issues, that are issues that cause stress among whites. They need to be dealt with. I don't see that there's a single problem here that can't be solved with our own science, our own structures, etc., and done in such a way that it's humane to all whites involved. That white men and women are all having children, they are able to contribute to the race, they're able to have some kind of sex life as well, and everybody feels happy, and at the end of the day, the end result is good for us as a race. That as a race, we're upping our IQ, we're increasing our quality. And we should actually make this top secret and keep it just to ourselves and only do it with ourselves. And anything that we learn in science, we should keep to ourselves, man. So I honestly think from a farm boy scientist perspective that these issues are minor. And look at the people of Eastern Europe. They've got problems too. And you want to tell me you can't solve this? You can't get a couple of scientists? I'm telling you, our scientists and the knowledge they have is so potent these days, we could solve problems. We need to just get the culture going to the point where a white child is the most important thing of all. The white child is the gold. And in here, this guy, at the end of his article, he said something. At the end of his article, he was pointing out that the lesson of Portugal in the 16th century is that the really important part, the biggest and most important asset that a nation or a race has is its people. And this is now said centuries ago, and it brings us to DNA, that DNA is the most important thing we have. If we can keep our DNA and fix that which is not right, that is the most important thing. I used to think to myself, with regard to Africa, for example, I did mention it in one video a long time ago. Imagine you took the blacks of Africa and you stuck them in Japan. And you took the Japanese and you stuck them in Africa. What would the end result be? Well, I would predict the following. That you put the blacks in Japan and the blacks will starve to death and die of cold. They will not be able to live in that dangerous country. Not to mention, if they ever get round to building anything, that they've still got lots of earthquakes to deal with. If you had to put the Japanese in Africa, I reckon Africa would totally rock. And that is because the human capital is the most important part. And that is the big takeaway from this, is that human capital is everything. But I don't think the Portuguese are so damaged that they are the most damaged and can't be fixed. The Portuguese are not alone. The Spanish are also somewhat guilty. The French are also a little bit guilty. The Italians are also a little bit guilty. There's a little bit of guilt everywhere. And you need to look at that and just see these as minor problems that can be solved. We have the technology, we have the everything. We just need to create the ethical structure that allows this to work. And we honestly should look at life from the viewpoint that the most important thing that a white woman can do is to have as many white children as is humanly possible. Do you know that the Romans took these things so seriously that about one third of all Roman men died in battle, and almost one third of Roman women died in childbirth. And again, poor women died in childbirth. Like I say, a third of all Roman women died in childbirth. Nowadays, with our science, our women don't need to die in childbirth. They can have lots of children and still be fine if we give them the proper medical attention, etc., if we use the proper methods. We have saved hundreds of millions of stupid blacks in Africa. Why can't we save our own people and let them have children? We need to have a culture where whenever any white woman is pregnant and she has a child, we're all high-fiving each other. We're all happy about it. And I'll bet you, if you bring in the scientists, you bring in the scientists and the doctors and our top people, they'll be able to tell us how we can have lots more children faster and how we could do it in a way that everybody's happy, you still get to have children, and maybe we're also, and at the same time, we're also breeding better children. I really don't see this as a problem that can't be solved. Honestly, if you see what we can do with animals, the real issue holding us up here is a whole bunch of emotional junk, and we want to force this system and that system. We should look at our science, look at our situation, come up with a solution. And maybe you don't need always just marriage. You have somebody who doesn't want to get married, but they can have children. And it may even be better, because in the days of the Aryans also had polygamy, where you had one man with multiple wives. You could go and do all kinds of mixing and matching, which would end up with good results. I honestly don't see this as a problem that we are not capable of solving at all. And among the points that come out of this is, yes, look at the problems that came from sticking with the blacks. And what about the Jews? The Jews should also have been gone. The Jews should also have been gone, definitely. But I think that for the Portuguese, the biggest problem may have been they are on a continent where there are a lot of active, energetic whites. And just like a athlete, if you've got two athletes sprinting, the one may be just slightly better than the other one, and that's the one who wins. It's the small difference that makes a big difference. And it can easily be that just small changes in their DNA result in big problems because they're on a continent where they're up against other whites. But the Portuguese, we should also remember, they were doing these things before we knew about race, before we knew about inheritance. So they were simply making a mistake that has been made by many others, including the Romans, the ancient Egyptians, the Persians. Whites have made this mistake many, many times before. But one can survive this mistake. And I've now told you that we can survive it scientifically. But I also have a question. Because people who come up to me and they talk to me about us having no future whatsoever, like this friend of mine in America, who said to me, every great civilization produced by whites was destroyed through miscegenation. Everyone without fail. And therefore, it will happen again. It will happen now. Well, the one answer to that is that those whites did not have the knowledge that we have. We now have a lot of firm knowledge to levels and degrees that we've never had before. But I raise this question. If the whites were wiped out in other civilizations through miscegenation, ancient Egypt, Persia, etc., how was it that we still have whites who are pure today? How is that so? If we lost ancient Egypt, we lost Persia, maybe we lost Babylon, the Sumerian civilization maybe. If we lost those civilizations, why is it that we yet again created Europe and the incredible sciences of Europe? Look at the fall of the Roman Empire. Even after the Roman Empire may have gone down, and yet we still produced new things again. And the only answer I can think of is that even in ancient times, if whites made mistakes and they lost a civilization, another example being India, and they lost a civilization and they were destroyed, there must have been some group, some small group or groups of whites who quietly moved away somewhere else, or who were untouched by that civilization. And they just very quietly carried on and stuck with their stuff, and they continued to thrive and move forward eventually. So even those people who were destroyed, those civilizations which were destroyed, and by the way, their remnants are those brownish people that you see in North Africa, the Middle East, and so on. In North Africa, the Middle East, the nearer parts of Asia, etc., you've still got all these sort of mixed people, these people that are between European and Asian, or European, Asian, and black, and what have you, and North African. You still have like these colored remnants, and you can see them by their physical looks. You can see it with the people of the Middle East and Persia, Iran. Go and look at the Iranians, and you will see the Iranians, even the northern parts of India, you will see the remnants of what used to be our race. So you've got all these groups that are the remnants of previous times when whites and non-whites got together. And yet you still had whites who were pure, who managed to survive and who built up Europe. So there had to have been a way of surviving. And I think that it's people who either left or were never part of it, or who deliberately left, who then went on to prosper again. So at the very, very least, if you even just get some whites away and you get them to stay by themselves, they will survive. But I think that in this day and age, especially with Europe, I find it impossible to believe that Europe and America can't be saved, especially with all kinds of technology. Once you have the correct code of ethics and you start doing things, you can do anything. The only thing that's going to stop you is our moral things. You know, if Christians come and say, well, a man's got to be married to a woman and blah, blah, blah. But if you have people who are more open-minded, you could have men and women having children and they don't have to be married, but you still have some mechanism to raise them. You still have some way of taking care of them. There have got to be answers. I find it impossible to believe that there is no answer. I find that impossible to believe. We've come very far. And as a whole anyway, our entire race needs to push its IQ up anyway. We really need to. And I'm sure that we've got the genes and the means to do it. You know, if the Finns can have an IQ of 101, why can't everybody get to an IQ of 101? And can't we make an IQ of 101 an IQ of 105? And again, in racial stuff, it has been shown that people who come from northern climates have a higher IQ. And there's a British scientist by the name of Lynn who has said that it's most likely because of the hardships those people lived through, that in order to have a high IQ, you needed hardship, you needed struggle. That it is intense struggle that pushes up your IQ. And you know what that could mean? It could mean that we're all having a soft, flabby life. And we actually need hardship. We maybe even need warfare itself in order for us to move forward. We must stop having this life where you go to McDonald's and get your burgers. You need a life of hard work, warfare, struggle. You need to live your life with intensity, and it may push up your IQ. That may be how it was that we became clever, that the stupid died under the conditions in which we lived, because Europe was covered in glaciers. Just 20,000 years ago, Europe was covered in glaciers. Trees have only grown in Europe in the last 19,000 years. So hardship is what is where we really come from. We come from hardship. And we need more hardship and more intensity in life, and we'll be fine. And we need to develop the disciplines and things that go with it. Because that's another thing. We're a very disciplined people, which others are not. The blacks, for example, don't understand discipline. There are many advantages we have. So I don't think these are problems that can't be solved. I think we can learn our lessons from this, and we should stick together. And I don't see any reason to make an outcast of the Portuguese or any of the other whites. Look at some of the other whites in Europe and their IQs. I think we should all stick together. We are all just from the original family. We need to up our game and push up our IQs, push up our gene pool, have tons more babies. This notion of 2 and 3 children, that's stupid, man. You need to be having 9, 10 children. So, yeah. So, that is the bad side of the lesson. And the bad news for the Americans is, even with this knowledge, there are still people being deliberately misled by the Jews. We got to try and turn that around. And the other thing that I will discuss with you in another video is the struggle and fight of the Portuguese as they fought the blacks. So maybe in the 16th century, the blacks were their sex pets. I will show you that there was still some miscegenation going on in Angola and Mozambique when the real thing came. And in the end, the Portuguese were fighting for their existence. And you will see how nasty it was. It was truly nasty. And those who believe that liberalism is going to make life easier for Americans, liberalism may actually open the doors to bigger nightmares than you can believe. And it will be nightmares along the lines of this. So we need to get our people to up their game, and everybody's got to get into the game, and we try and do what we can. I believe that we are well and truly easily capable of solving these problems once we have the right attitude. I believe that with the right attitude, you're sorted out. I think that in this day and age, these problems, these are minor issues. Minor issues easily overcome, but we've got to embrace eugenics. We've got to embrace eugenics and science and new forms of thought and discipline so that our race doesn't die out and so that we don't lose quality. If we can breed cattle and horses to be better and better and better, why the hell can't we do it with our people? You want to tell me we can't do it? I find it impossible to believe. So anyway, we will be talking about race war, and you will see that there are things about blacks that you don't know, that the things that the whites in America are doing, the liberals getting you to do, is laying the groundwork for big problems, huge problems. And in their case, they don't have an excuse. They do know that it's not the done thing, that it's not right. But we will return to the Portuguese, and you'll see the other side of the Portuguese. You'll see how they finally fought in their final battle that they fought. And I really would like to see other whites, you know, give the Portuguese a pat on the back, because when you see what these people went through in their final battles in Africa, you'll be astounded. You'll be absolutely astounded how these people struggled and fought the blacks and dominated them and smashed them and crushed them in a way that I think Hitler and Mussolini would have been astounded. They would never have suspected the Portuguese would do this. but they did do it, and it's on record. So don't ever give up. Never lose faith in whites. We have no need to give up. The game is far from over. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.